Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on Newer FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. On the show today, I'll be joined by Sean Crossan, author of a new book entitled Gaelic Games on Film, From Silent Films to Hollywood Hurling, Horror and Emergence of Irish Cinema. And I'm delighted to say that I should be joined on the line now by Sean. Sean, how are you? Thanks a million for joining me today.
Not at all, Patrick. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you about the book.
Yeah, and Sean, reading the book, I was struck. It was incredibly well researched. How long did it take you to... I can imagine there was a lot of material to go through. How long did it take you to kind of prepare the book?
It took me about 13 years in total between the first invitation. It was a colleague of mine at NUI Galway at the time in late 2006 who was then hosting a conference for the Sport History Ireland Association. And he asked me at that time, I'm based in the film school or the film department in NUI Galway, if there was much Gaelic Games on film. And that kind of began a journey which eventually culminated in a book that was published a few months ago. It was a journey. I had no, I really didn't have a great expectation there would be as much or as fascinating a story to tell. But when I started to get into the archives and looking at what survived on whether it was in Hollywood cinema or indeed in the archives of the Irish Film Institute, that there's this extraordinary story and insight that we can find by looking at how film captured Gaelic Games right from the very earliest years of the 20th century.
And a lot of the early footage that you document in the book would have come from British newsreels and how they depicted our games. The fact that the games were depicted by them rather than our National Film Institute, are the representation of our games kind of accurate when you look and see them films?
Well, I suppose in the first instance, we're fortunate that they did film those games at that time, because there was no real indigenous film industry or film culture. So the fact that we have as much surviving footage from, say, the 1920s into the 1940s of Gaelic games is largely thanks to the interest that British newsreel companies took in Gaelic games in Ireland, no doubt conscious of the audience, Irish people of Irish descent in Britain, but also in part of their own selling of their films at that time to Irish cinemas. So the footage they would have of Gaelic games, whether it was Gaelic football or hurling, would be used to get into cinemas around the country. But when we watch the films, on one hand, it's great to be able to see players of the 1920s, 30s, 40s, but on the other hand, it's clear that the commentators and the producers of these newsreels, whether it's from British Pathé or British Gaumont or British Movie Tone, didn't understand what they were watching. And whether it's the commentary referring to the wrong team or the rules of soccer being applied in the commentary to Gaelic games or their inability to pronounce the names of the counties. I'd say many of your listeners are probably familiar with that kind of Oxford RP accent we associate with British newsreels. So you can imagine that being used to commentate on Gaelic games. There's an incongruity there from the off. And you add to that the fact that they really didn't understand what they were watching. It does add to, at times, it's almost comical in terms of what you're encountering in terms of the audio. And in fact, what happened in Ireland often from speaking to people who remembered those newsreels is that people would turn off the sound and they'd have local people giving commentary on what was being watched.
Okay, that's interesting. And
that was one of the ways in which they would. So, that was one way in which the Irish cinemas and Irish audiences and Irish teams address that deficiency in the newsreels that existed and survived today.
Yeah, and one of the earliest Irish fiction films that showed hurling in film was Knocknagow. Can you tell us, Sean, how important is that film in terms of as a social document telling us about Ireland off that time period?
Knocknagow is a critical film. It really is the first feature film, Indigenous feature film, made in this country in 1918 by the Film Company of Ireland, which was one of the earliest Irish production companies specialising in fiction narrative film. It's an adaptation of what was the most popular novel in Ireland in the 19th century, Charles Kickham's Knocknagow or The Homes of Tipperary. There was not a home in Ireland that wouldn't have had a copy of that book in the 19th century. So it was an obvious kind of subject matter for the Film Company of Ireland when they were considering making their first feature film. But what's fascinating is that within the films itself, sport features quite prominently, both the throwing of the hammer or the sledgehammer and the hurling sequences. And they're both, in both depictions, we have given that the film was made in 1918 and released in 1918, we have a fascinating kind of early rendering of what those sports may have been like, because Knocknagow is set in the mid-19th century. So you have people in 1918 looking back at the mid-19th century and speculating as to the way in which hurling and the hammer throw were played or performed at that time, whether it's the shape of the hurley stick or the manner in which the teams were set out, or the area in which they played, but also there's additional kind of element to it, which is the class dimension within the films, and how sport is used as a way of capturing or depicting the kind of labouring classes, particularly those who, and this was a feature of the GAA. Part of the reason why it came into existence was as an attempt to provide Indigenous sporting activities for the mass of the Irish population, which were effectively excluded by the regulations around sport, amateur sports, that existed in that period in the 19th century. And that's reflected within Knocknagow, and that the hurling has been played by the labouring players, and the hammer throw is a contest between the British officer, the representation of the kind of British state, and the hero of the book, the local farm labourer, Matt the Thresher Donovan, who also is leading the hurlers in the play, in the hurling game.
Yeah,
so sport's really, really important in that film.
And that's kind of a good depiction of Ireland in films like that. But the Hollywood depiction of hurling, in particular in them early days, it really, really fed every stereotype that was there, and really kind of showed that we were heavy drinkers and hurling was a violent game.
Absolutely.
How long did that last, that Hollywood depiction of hurling being a violent game?
There's still echoes of it today, in fact, in some contemporary films, and we might come back to those. But when you go back to, particularly what I found fascinating was there's a period between the 1930s and 1950s where you find hurling in particular, of course, hurling being the sport that's featured far more than Gaelic football in terms of mainstream international cinema. But there was a series of shorts made by several of the major studios, including Warner Bros., MGM, Paramount, that were focused on hurling in those decades, one of which in 1955 was nominated for the best Oscar for the best short documentary. That, even though it's not a documentary, that's one of the kind of fascinating things about the way in which it was kind of positioned and circulated. But what you find in these films, particularly the films in the 1930s, the Warner Bros. Shorts that were part of, so presented by a guy called Ted Hoosing, and Ted Hoosing, to the commentary of sports commentary in the US, is what Micheál O'Hare is to Gaelic games commentary in Ireland. He is a key figure in how the kind of pacing, the delivery, the kind of idiom you associate with sports commentary in the US was defined in the early 20th century, first on radio and then into cinema and television. And interestingly, he, in these short films about sport. He has hurling features in two of the episodes, one called Ted Hoosing Sports Slants, the other Ted Hoosing Sports Trills, which were made for Warner Bros. But in both, it is the potential for violence in hurling that's to the fore. And it uses hurling as an opportunity to affirm that stereotype of the Irish as a kind of a violent or potentially violent people.
Mm.
But it's done also in a very comic slapstick, you might call slapstick, of which, of course, is very popular through Charlie Chaplin, Laurel Hardy, and so on in that period. And then in 1936, MGM make this fascinating short called Hurling, as part of a series by a popular producer called Pete Smith in that period. And that's an extraordinary piece. It's very problematic in that it focuses on the violent potential, slapstick, as they say, violent potential of hurling. But it's also, I think, more complex in the sense that clearly this sport is being played by people. It's like a film literally of two halves, in the sense that the first half is demonstrating the rules of hurling, played by Irish-Americans who clearly understand the game and can play the game. And then the second half is just guys battering each other over the head with hurley sticks, and it becomes a kind of a farce, a slapstick kind of account of hurling, but primarily for comic potential. And it's in that way, and we can talk about, and I talk about in the book, how it goes into then to feature film and references to hurling in the work of John Ford, for example, that seminal figure in American cinema, through The Quiet Man and through Rising of the Moon and Young Cassidy, and where the references to hurling, on one hand, would seem to affirm that stereotype of violence or the potential for violence, but there's always another kind of narrative or another. It's more complex in the sense that there's an interrogation of that stereotype, and perhaps that's going on in the earlier work, in that what you're also witnessing in this period is Irish America transforming itself from the margins of American society to the very center of course American society, with the election of John F. Kennedy in 1960, using aspects of Irish culture where they're transforming the kind of former threatening stereotypes of the Irish as violence, to the Irish as, okay, there may be the potential of violence, but actually it's more comical, it's more recreational violence. If you think about The Quiet Man, that famous last 20 minutes of a fight sequence, but it's part of a kind of a humorous, kind of enjoyable depiction of Irish culture, rather than one that is threatening to the viewer or to the audience. And that was what Ford and others were involved in, and were using sport as part of that process, where you introduce and bring the mainstream of American life into the distinctive features of Irish culture, but it, at the same time, they're trying to deactivate or to remove or assuage the kind of concerns that existed prior to that about Irish culture and about Irish identity.
Yeah, and I want to go back to when the National Film Institute started. I think you mentioned in the book it was 1948 when they started filming All Ireland. I just want to ask you, there was a snippet that I found fascinating, and a fascinating character, George Fleischman. Do you mind, Sean, just telling us a bit about him? Because I found his backstory fascinating.
Yeah, George Fleischman, extraordinary story there in terms of how he became involved. And he is a critical figure, by the way, not just in terms of the filming of Gaelic Games, but in the emergence of Irish film more generally in the immediate post-war period. George Fleischman was of Austrian, born in Austria, but conscripted into the Luftwaffe during the Second World War. Mm. Worked on a reconnaissance plane during the war. And in 1941, when he was on a mission over Britain as a photographer taking photographs of various sites in the UK, he was shot down, and the plane crash-landed in Waterford. He was interned in the Curragh along with his fellow fellow pilots and soldiers in that plane. And he decided after the war, he got permission from the German embassy at the time to have the camera returned to him, an Arriflex 35mm camera. And he decided after the war to stay on in Ireland. Mm. And those interested in film were very fortunate that he did, because this was such a rare, in terms of Irish film, it was so rare for a high quality 35mm camera to be available, and a very experienced and capable cinematographer to be available. And he very quickly became a key figure in terms of the real Irish films from the 40s on. And in 48, when the National Film Institute decided to film All-Ireland Finals in Hurling and Gaelic Football, Fleischmann was the cinematographer they turned to realise those films. And, of course, Fleischmann, his background, before he became involved with the Luftwaffe, he had trained with UFA, which was the main film production company in Germany in the 1920s and 1930s. And, in fact, he'd worked on Leni Riefenstahl's seminal sports documentary, Olympia, which was her filming, and it's still one of the most important and influential sports documentaries ever produced, and defined in many ways the style and the pacing and the techniques used to film sports that we still encounter today in sport filming of sporting events. And he was a camera operator on that and brought those skills to the filming of Gaelic games from the 1940s onwards, whether it was in terms of camera positioning or indeed the overall kind of use of the sports. One of the things that we encounter when we look at those National Film Institute films from 1948 on is that they're much more than just, and they're really important records of the sports and of the players and of the teams of those periods, but they're much more in the sense that they're also about describing and defining Irishness. Whether it's like a lot of the film is made up of the build-up, positioning the sports, reminding the audience about the significance and the centrality of these sports to Irish identity, but also defining Irishness in the period, whether it's the prominent position of the Catholic Church and the Catholic clergy throughout these films, of the politicians of the day, the use of the Irish language, indeed the inclusion of kind of pageants that were featured in Croke Park at the centre around Irish unity, and defining the Irish nation very much as ignoring partition and talking about the 32 county nation as part of the legacy of Irish nationalism and as a key kind of goal of Irish. But it's more than a goal in a sense in those films, in the sense that to watch them, if you encountered the films without knowing Irish history, you'd presume that this already existed in the way in which it's presented within the films. But these became really important texts for affirming the Irish nation in what was, of course, a very challenging period, in the immediate post-war period. The 1950s has been described as a decade of crisis for Irish society, of very high immigration, very high unemployment, economic depression. But it also simultaneously was the decade in which Gaelic games, the attendances shot up to over 90,000 by the end of the decade for all Ireland. It's and incredible. The films of those games, which were very, very popular, were a key part of that story and of the popularisation of Gaelic games and conceptions of Irishness in that period.
Yeah, and before I let you go, Sean, the sense from reading the end of the book I get is that Irish cinema is in a good place at the moment. And we get films, you mention Any Given Sunday, and recently we had the film about the Blue Sisters. Is that the sense that you get in Irish cinema at the moment, that it is in a good place and it's getting more experimental, and if film is a reflection of society, film at the moment in Ireland, it kind of is really, really in a good place at the moment?
Yeah, I'd agree in general terms. I think Irish film is certainly in a much better place, in the sense that most importantly, there's much more film being made, much more Indigenous film being made. This has been facilitated by both the fact we have an Irish film board now called Screen Ireland, which has been very supportive and has very positively and progressively supported the development of film in Ireland. But also, it's much more possible now to make a film than ever before because of the advent of digital technology. You can make films today for a fraction of what it would have been needed even, say, 10, 15 years ago. And this has led to a position where a small country like our own can have a much more vibrant and healthier film culture, which is what we have today. And I've just, last week I was at the Galway Film Fla, which had a premieres of over 20 Irish films, and you get a sense there of the health and the variety, and also the key role that these films play as, I think, for any kind of a healthy society, healthy culture, they need film as a kind of a critical tool to ask questions, to explore, to open up the kind of perhaps taboo issues or most challenging issues within the society itself. And Irish film is certainly doing that at the moment.
Well, your book, Sean, Gaelic Games on Film, it's an excellent document of a really, really fascinating book. Thanks a million. You've been very generous with your time. Thanks a million for joining us. That's great. That was Sean Cross, an author of a U-book, Gaelic Games on Film. And really, really fascinating, and loads of snippets of information there that I never heard. And I really, really could have spoke for longer with Sean, but unfortunately we're out of time. Before I leave you this evening, just a few bits of housekeeping. Next week I will be taking a break. I'll be away next week, so there'll be no Beyond the Back Page next week, but I will be back as normal the following week. And just for more sport on Near FM, if you tune in on Saturday at 10:30, Fergus Carroll will have his usual Saturday sports show, and he'll have his results show at 8 p.m. on Sunday. And if you want to listen to back to, we have been running the show now for well over a year, and we've had some excellent interviews, really, really insightful guests. So if you want to listen back to any of our previous shows, go on to the Near FM page and search Beyond the Back Page, and you'll get some of our previous interviews that we've done in the last few weeks. I was going to run, I've run slightly over time with Sean because I just didn't want to cut him short. So, but we've loads of sport to look forward to at the weekend. And I suppose for a Dublin point of view, all eyes will be on in Croke Park on Sunday, when they will, or a Saturday evening when they play 7 p.m. against Roscommon. So that'll be a very fascinating game, and really, really interesting with the news that Dermot Connolly is back training with the Dublin team. So people will be interested. So it's all football this weekend. Really, really great games. Cork and Tyrone is on at 5 p.m. and on Sunday we have Mayo, Meath, Kerry and Donegal. I want to say good luck to the Irish teams competing in the Europa League qualifiers this evening. I'm looking at it. St Pat's and Cork are up against it. They lost 2-0 in their first legs, but they're really, really up against it. So hopefully Shamrock Rovers seem to be our best bet for an Irish representative in the next stage. It's 2-2 to SK Bram of Norway from the first leg. So hopefully now they will get an Irish team into the next stage, and that game is 8 p.m. this evening in Tallaght Stadium. And in just over half an hour, the Irish under-19s will be in action against France at 6 p.m. So that is in the under-19s tournament. The Ireland had a great result, fought back on Monday when they were playing against Norway. So hopefully they will get a result there. That's pretty much it for this evening. I would sincerely thank my guest, Sean Crossan, for joining me this evening. that, as I say, we will take a break from the show for 2 weeks, but I'll be back with more. Until next time, I will talk to you then.